This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my company, Horns of Odin. Now, Horns of Odin is a family-run business, and we sell Norse-inspired products. Particularly, we specialise in handmade, handcrafted drinking horns, which I made myself. But alongside that, we have a huge clothing collection. We sell a bunch of different meads. We've got beers and ales. We've got handmade jewellery, books, artwork. So if you like the sound of any of that, pop over to the website. It's www.hornsofodin.com. If you like anything, pop it in the cart. Use the code HORNS10 at checkout and you're going to get 10% off your entire order. Now that's HORNS10. It's going to get you 10% off your entire order. It's just a little thank you from us for listening to the podcast. The podcast is also brought to you by our website, NordicMythologyPodcast.com. Some of you have already seen that we've got a bunch of different merch on there. We've got some t-shirt designs. Now we've just added a brand new limited edition t-shirt. So there's only going to be 100 of these printed. After that, we're never going to print them again. So just pick one up whilst you can. So the design has been done by last week's guest, Jakob, aka Raven from the North, who was on last week's episode. It's a one-off design. Just pop over to the website, have a look. It's Odin and his two ravens. It's a really beautiful t-shirt. I'm definitely going to get one. I think we've sold probably about 25% of them already. So just pop over to NordicMythologyPodcast.com and have a look and see what you think. Right, let's jump into the show. Hello and welcome to the Nordic Mythology Podcast. I'm Daniel Farrand, co-owner of the company Horns of Odin, and I'm joined, as always, by Dr. Matthias Nordvig.
Hello, everyone. So now, this time, we are joined by Ludvig Sver from Forndom, Swedish, one-man band. And sometimes you have a couple of people helping you out on stage, if I understand correctly. Personally been a fan since I think that would be 2015 is when I discovered Forndom. So and you play this type of like ambient Nordic music, of course inspired by Nordic mythology and folklore and so on. So welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to join us. I mean, it was one of the most fun research sessions I had today. You know, most of the time I try to do a little bit of research into the guests and read in bits and pieces, but for you it was literally just stick on some really cool music, get in the workshop and do what I do every day, you know, carving horns, making horns and listening to your music. I think I listened literally through the whole catalog from beginning to end.
Yeah, well, it's not that very long in minutes, so it's doable, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It didn't, I mean, it probably took me maybe like 2-3 hours, 2.5 hours, something like that. But I enjoyed it. It was a journey. I felt like an emotional wreck by the end of it.
Yeah. With all of them or just the last one?
I think all of them. All of them have that, this, you have this beautiful way, I think, of building things up. It's almost, I think it's almost mute. Like I don't want to be disrespectful and say of like, say, moving music, but it kind of has that feel for, even like someone like Hans Zimmer, which I feel like is one of the best sort of moving music people in the world ever. It's that, it has that feel to it that it kind of brings emotion about it. I was just kind of stood at my desk working and I would just suddenly feel upset or happy or angry. It's like, it was just weird that these emotions were coming through to me doing the job that I do every day, but the music was just kind of having this effect on me. And not many things have that effect on me, certainly not music. I mean, most of the time I'm listening to Kiss or something along those lines. But no, I certainly enjoyed it. And like I say, I enjoyed having that emotional feeling. Is that something you intend to do or is that kind of just something that comes naturally?
Well, it comes partly in intentionally because what inspires me the most is what inspires me partially is at least I'm influenced by to take like the normal mind of today, mm-hmm. put it in the past. That is what inspires me, and probably that's what inspired me to to go on and research history of religion in the university as well. Because you have this, you have archaeology and all different kind of options to go for, but history of religion was the part of that got me the most. And I guess that was because it concerns the how they thought and the thinking process. And yeah, that's what inspires me the most. And of course, then, you know, feelings have been around forever, you know. And people have always been sad because of certain reasons and such. So, I just try to put, you know, things of today and the things that concern myself and then put it in the cloak of something older. For me, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, an old sound. It more concerns the thoughts behind everything.
You know, it's definitely a beautiful thing listening to it. And I mean, I even had to message you at one point today and was like, are you sure this is all you? Like, no. Because listening to it sounds like it could be a band. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of post-production you put all together. But I almost wonder whether that's part of why it has that such an emotional connection and such a personal feeling. It, for me anyway, it sets aside from things like Wadruna and Heilung. It spoke more personally to me on an individual level. I wonder if that is because it is just you making it. It's not kind of all different creative ideas coming from a bunch of different people.
And I guess that could be kind of partially why I do it alone, because I've been playing in bands when I was younger, and, you know, black metal bands and everything. But I always felt like in the end, there is only one or two persons that is the driving force. I don't like that so much. If I want to do something, I don't want, you know, some kind of hang around on the side that doesn't do anything and just follows the tour, I would say. But more, if you are in it, you're meant to be in it 100%. And even if I have line members that I feel is completely dedicated and that I, know, in spirit they are part of Fundum, I still want to continue doing it myself because I feel that's the way it works the best.
So are we dealing with sort of a Nietzschean approach to being a musician?
Yeah, I guess that's right.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially with the type of music that you're making. And I wanted just to circle back to what you were saying about reconstructing the emotional spectrum that we're dealing with, rather than necessarily just, you know, trying to be authentic with the sound itself. I think that's a really interesting thought.
Yeah.
This idea that we we think of like working with the past, for instance, as in scholarship, at least we think of it in terms of like working with some kind of it's an intellectual pursuit. It is very very defined by both material processes and also of course by standards of science. But there's something to be said for trying to access the past through emotions as well.
Yeah.
And you know, that scientific approach that we usually apply also has its limitations, because we don't always we can't get the full spectrum of what it means to be human, right, in that past age.
Oh.
Using only these methods. So I really like that. That's a really, really cool a pursuit, so to speak.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to forget that these people did have emotion as well. And whether it's 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years or 10,000 years ago, people still will always have had emotions. But, you know, when you look at pieces of paper or artifacts, you kind of, it's easy to forget that. So it's nice to have that that memory of that and kind of trigger it to make you think, you know, at the end of the day, they are just humans.
Yeah. And I mean, even if people have been always been sad and always felt these different feelings, there has always been a difference in what makes them sad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, for us, you know, for many in our Western society, I guess, you know, that killing an animal is like the hardest thing you can do if you're not like a farmer or a butcher or something. But if you go back like 100 years ago only, there was nothing, you know, there was nothing weird with, you know, killing an animal at the farm, you know.
Well, not even at the farm. I think in London, they were killing animals in the street.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
they'd have, just have like butchered stalls set up where they'd kill the animal, butcher it, and then sell the meat. So in just such a small window, it's become such a big thing.
Yeah. And then if you go back like 1,000 years, there's this there is this discussion today, some scholars that believe that, you know, killing animals that can't be, or killing humans that can't be true, because it's so unrealistic that they would, you know, sacrifice so many humans, you know, for no reason, only for, you know, the sake of sacrificial or sacrifice. But if you go back and if you really had this reason to do it and you really believe something, it's nothing strange with it. And I think it's really important to remember that even if they had feelings, their mindset was completely different. They lived in a completely different society.
Mm-hmm. I think if you believe in something, then I think anything is possible for humans to do.
Mm-hmm. Moving on from human sacrifice.
So, no, Ludwig, one thing I was going to ask was, do you have any kind of, I guess, specific way that you try and connect with the emotions or get yourself in that state of mind when you're writing to try and, because it can't be easy to put yourself in the position of somebody 1,000 years ago and get into their mindset, their emotions and put that down into music.
Something I try to do is to always research the material and the sources. What can you find and what different perspectives you have on how they looked upon the old gods? You know, was it, you know, a forefather, or was it like more on Iceland, like a friend? And especially I think that this perspective of having this god as a friend is also something that you can look upon really easily today. And I think that there are these poems where this becomes really clear, like how they really looked upon their god. Someone that even could betray them. Yeah, that's what inspires me the most when it comes to that, I would say.
So does each project have like an overall theme to it? Like, would you base it on what one particular poem, or do you have different ones pulled in there?
Do you mean each song?
Each song, or maybe I was thinking even each album, would you have like one that does the whole album and then pick within?
Yeah, I more try to focus on the album in itself, rather than individual songs. And for example, on the last album, it was very much focused on just what I mentioned, you know, like the relationship between the worshipper and the god itself, and the relationship between them, and how all these bad things can happen all the time, and you know, you still keep on this relation, and you try to kind of see what the god means with all of these kind of things.
It's that it's kind of that idea of compartmentalizing things, and you, even if something bad happens, you almost have to try and twist it into seeing it from a good angle, and it happened for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. It's just about that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Matthias, anything you want? I didn't know whether you were leaning forward to.
I was actually sitting and thinking about this, and it is interesting to consider this. This is what, you know, a lot you see with a lot of people who believe in gods, that the idea that there's a plan. Right, that God has a plan, and all these arbitrary events, whether they're good or bad, they sort of like fit into that plan. I'm reminded of Hrafnkell Freyskoði, as a figure of the saga literature who runs into a lot of bad luck. He's called Freyskoli for a reason. He's a priest, whatever you want to call it, to the god Freyr. He's got a horse that's dedicated to this god, and his servant at one point rides that horse, even though he has said that he can't. He said that nobody can ride this horse because it's a holy horse. So that horse is dedicated and very important. And then, of course, he finds out that his servant has been riding on the horse, and then he kills the servant because that's what he swore that he would do. And then we have this development where the servant's family they take revenge, and Hrafkell is completely dispossessed. His farm is taken away from him. His nice little temple, all of these things are taken away. And then he goes through sort of a process. Before all of this happened, he was known as an ójafnaðarmaður. So that's a man who is not going to seek any any compromise. He will not take your shit. That's basically it. He will respond with maybe even more forcefully than what came to him. Basically, that's what ójafnaðarmaður means. And then he becomes a jafnaðarmaður, a man who will see eye to eye on things afterwards. So he goes through this process. and of course, the purpose, like any other medieval Icelandic saga, the purpose is to tell everybody that Christianity is cool, and these old pagans, they ditched Christianity at some point. This is also kind of what is the sentiment behind Hrafkell here. He sort of leaves the old religion behind. But it's interesting to consider that, if this was something that actually happened, in the lifetime of a person, I'm sure that it would have been, and it wasn't just, a literary story that's telling us that Christianity is awesome and stuff like that. Then I'm sure this person would have found a way to make peace with their situation and have applied some kind of reasoning where, well, this is part of the god Freyr that I'm dedicated to. This is part of his plan, so to speak. He's trying to tell me something here and bring me into a better situation somehow. I feel like that's a very sort of like basic approach that so many people have when it comes to religion and to sort of try to see a bigger picture. Now, whether or not that bigger picture exists, that's another question.
I wonder whether that's just down to religion or it's just human nature in general. Whether if you took religion completely out of it, whether humans would, I imagine we would still try and make up a good reason for the bad happening or try and twist it, because that you naturally want to, I guess you naturally want to be positive and spin something to have a positive effect, even if it's something really shitty.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Actually, somebody said something that really resonated with me. They said, "Well, life is meaningless, but as a human, you're the person who's making meaning in it. You're the person who's connecting all the dots and then sort of like giving it a nice package." And I think that's a nice. Again, perhaps a little bit of a Nietzschean approach to to existence, that you're basically, as a human being, you're putting meaning into existence. It didn't exist before you came around, basically.
No, that's true, and that kind of reminds me of a conversation me and Sarah had earlier. She was saying about how she was going to come off social media because it was just annoying, or like Instagram. She was like, it's just frustrating. I was like, yeah, but you choose the people you follow. So like what you're seeing is what who you've decided to follow and what you've chosen to see. You could easily have just chosen other stuff. So I feel like that kind of relates to it is in that what you put in your life and put around you is how you perceive things.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I agree that there's at least an element of that, and especially nowadays you can choose your directions. I've actually had similar thoughts as her about this. I'm like tired of Facebook, man.
I think a lot of people have. I imagine throughout lockdown, a lot of people will have completed Instagram, like just gone through it all and seen everything. Because it's easily done. Ludwig, this was one thing I wanted to ask. Your Instagram is very artsy as well, as in like a photography side of things. Is that an interest you have on that side of things? Because your the fandom Instagram isn't just music stuff. Or no, that's not kind of how I see it. It's very sort of nature images.
Yeah.
Are you interested in photography side of things as well, or is that kind of just come across?
Yeah, well, that's kind of how it started. I was playing in this band up to like 2011 or so. And then I quit gymnasium, as it was at the time. It's called in Sweden. It's like high school in the US, I guess.
Okay.
Then I basically just moved home to a house at my parents' farmstead. And I just started to take daily walks in the forest and everything. Then I came across this site, Tumblr. It's not that very active anymore, but I think it's still, it still exists, but I don't think it's that many people that hangs around there anymore. It has kind of fallen apart, I guess. But I created this, or I created a profile, and then I came across this profile that had music on it, because every kind of site was almost like a small web page, you could say. So you could add music to it, and I thought that was such a great idea, and it lifted the whole thing so much. So I just thought like, but why don't I start taking pictures during my walks, So I started to, take regular pictures with my phone and upload it. And then it got more and more serious, and I bought this DSLR and continued that process.
That's when you know you're hooked.
Yeah, and then I continued on, and I think it was after I saw Drögerin, black metal ambient act, in a black metal festival in Västerås in Sweden in 2011, I think it was, or 12. And 12 it was probably. And then I decided that, I really should, add music to my page as well. So I bought an iMac and, bought Logic as a DAW, and I just, create the music, because of course music was something I knew, but I didn't write it as any serious kind of music. It was more like just, basic things that I just got inspired by walking close to where I live.
So the music was just an accident, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it was just something to go alongside the photos, and then...
Yeah, and it's quite funny, because always, when you're younger, you think like, you want to be a rock star or something like that. All kids dream.
But, I dreamt of it, but I can't sing and I'm tone deaf and I can't play an instrument. So unless I was going to be like Bez out of the Happy Mondays, then... That was it.
No, but I kind of gave up on that idea completely. And then when I finally did something unserious, kind of got more popular, because the thing is, I I uploaded it so it was available on my Tumblr, and then I uploaded it on YouTube. This was in 2013, I think, 2014. I'd been in Oslo working for a while, and it was a really shitty job. Consisted of selling alarms. So my job was basically to knock on Norwegian people's homes in the middle of the night, almost like 8, almost this time, you know,
mm-hmm.
To ask them if they wanted to buy a home alarm. That was my job, and it was completely terrible. So I gave up after just 2 weeks.
I don't blame you.
No. You know, at least you could pull it off as a Swede.
Yeah.
I mean, if it were a Dane, they'd be like, what is this guy trying to say?
You just, especially if it was late at night, if it was like 8 o'clock, you should just climbed in through a window, and then and then you would have a good sales pitch. You'd been like, you know, buy an alarm, because otherwise I wouldn't be in here.
Yeah, I actually sold one alarm to an old lawyer, but that was like the only alarm I sold. That was the first day, but after that, it was completely terrible because we were up in the villages around Oslo, and it was quite often like high up in the mountains, so it was quite cold. It was like November or October or something.
Yeah, sounds pretty grim. Was it all commission based as well?
Yeah, it was all commission based, and that was like the thing that made me give up, because I didn't have any security.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end I just gave up. So I worked there for 2 weeks, and then I had 2 more weeks before I went back home. So during that time I just went around in Oslo, and I just, because they have a really great traffic it's really easy to get to like the forest and everything. I just walked around there and spent 2 weeks. In the meantime, I just, you know, recorded the EP in the evenings.
So easily.
Yeah. And then it was almost completely done when I finally came back home. Then I just finished it. And then I, like I said, I uploaded it to my Tumblr, and then it was to YouTube. And then I think it was like 1 or 2 months, and then I checked the YouTube again, and then it had like more than 100,000 views. And you know,
oh, wow.
In that short time, it was really shocking.
Yeah, but that was surreal.
Yeah, and I think that this kind of surreal feeling is still with me today, because I feel, you know, I don't see my music as something that very special. I cannot really understand that people can listen to it.
Oh, they can. I like to say they definitely can.
Yeah, but you know, I think I'm the most self-critical person when it comes to my music. So
I think most good artists are. I think usually the ones who aren't tend to be terrible. The ones who are really kind of cocky and arrogant about this, like, this is amazing, and then usually it's awful. And then you find the, you know, the ones who are like, no, my music's terrible, it's, or anything, like, my art's awful, and then you see it, it's like, fucking hell, no, it's not. what are you listening to? So I absolutely love listening to, like I say, listening to the whole catalog today. And I think, you know, some of the songs on Spotify, you've got like 5.5 million listens to some of the top tracks on there, yeah. Which is a ridiculous amount of people.
Yeah, it's quite funny because, like I said, this kind of surreal feeling, and, you know, it got more serious after I kind of realized, like, oh, people actually like this.
Mm-hmm.
And when I made the second or the first album, it was more serious. But back then, I had more like a, you know, blank page. I hadn't written so much, so and it was still quite small. So I felt like I had more freedom, you know, what I could do without people expecting it to sound in a certain way. Mm-hmm. I think that almost the whole album was just improvisation, you know. I just put on a drone and then I just played. So it was written in like a week or so.
there'll be musicians listening to this will be like, motherfucker. Like, just so angry, just sat there like furious.
Yeah, it's quite hard to believe that it's gone so popular.
Do you find that most of your music comes like that? I don't want to say easily, because I'm sure it's not easy, but kind of once it starts flowing, you get it's a quick process.
I think the more known you get, and the more people you know that listens, the harder it gets. I think this is something that everybody struggles with. Like, should you do what you actually want to do, or should you do what people expect?
That's a good point. I imagine that expectation is a tough thing to keep up to, because I imagine if you went, you know, completely west, took a different direction to what you've been doing so far, you will always get those people who just like, what's this? This is
complain. It's not only about, you know, if you want to have more listeners or not, you know, want to be popular among more people to, you know, smoothen out the sound and sound more like, you know, like listener friendly, or how to say.
I wanted to circle back to this aspect of emotion, because I think it's really interesting to see that, you know, with the material that we have from the Viking Age, especially in the literature, skaldic poetry and such, it's actually incredibly emotional.
Yeah.
It's I don't think a lot of people realize this, especially, you know, not with, you know, the modern popular image of what Vikings are. they're just a bunch of like violent psychos with no emotional repertoire whatsoever. But I mean, it is incredibly emotional poetry that we get from the Viking Age and in skaldic poetry. And you use a lot of that as inspiration, right?
Yeah.
And we were talking about actually reading Sona Torek, Egil Skallagrimsson's famous poem. And I don't actually know what it's called in English, to be honest.
Yeah, hopefully we are going to get to that and read it. Because I know that Ludwig said it was one of his inspirations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, sorry to jump in. I just want to reiterate, like, the emotion that and it sounds like I'm just kind of trying to just flog a dead horse, but it's very rare that I get emotion like that from music. And it's not just because you hear, it was just something that I genuinely felt whilst listening to. I don't know whether it was just because I listened to beginning to end, so maybe anybody that's listening, I challenge you to do the same, just listen to the whole discography, like, from beginning to end. Because it was that just very emotional feeling. And I have no shame in kind of just saying, you know, there was moments where for no reason it would just bring me to feeling like I wanted to cry. And it wasn't that I was particularly sad. It was just like a deeper feeling of emotion that just popped up out of nowhere. And I was like, fuck me, where's this just come from? Yeah. And I know I compared you earlier to like Hans Zimmer, because that's the only person I can think of or that I have the knowledge of who also gives me that kind of feeling just through very much instrumental music. Because it's not like I understand the words with what you do. It is very much emotion is coming from the instruments alone. And with his stuff as well, that's very much similar to that raw emotion that is just drummed up through instruments. It's not because I understand the words and the words are sad. It's a very raw feeling. I think that's such an amazing thing, or such an amazing talent to be able to do, because it's something that transcends language. It's not just sad words that make you upset. It's raw and deeper than that. And it was a personal experience that I had today, which I really was really excited to come on here and talk about, because it was something that I don't normally experience through music, and that's kind of across the board from most of the people. So I kind of want to not necessarily say thank you for that, but it was a new experience that I thoroughly did enjoy that I wasn't expecting.
Thank you. And yeah, of course it is influenced by, you know, personal things, as I mentioned earlier. And I guess I try to put myself and what has happened to me in the eyes of this fictional self in a different time, or how to say.
What I find amazing is the ability to do it through music alone, and in not, because I don't want to, I'm trying to not be disrespectful to like where people, because I imagine it's easier through words. You know, if you write a sad song and the words are sad, that's kind of easy to understand that. But to get that through just the music, or at least I thought it was an amazing thing. Everyone else might think I'm just talking shit, but I found it to be a really amazing experience and a really, imagine, a complicated thing to do. Mateus, you're laughing at me.
I'm always laughing at you. No, I'm just kidding. No, I agree. That's definitely also something that I realized the first time I was listening to your music, Ludwig. And especially, you know, one of the things that struck me with some of the earliest material, it had sort of almost sometimes like a horror kind of sound to it. Like, you know, the same kind of sound bits that you might find in a horror movie.
I agree with that 100%. I definitely got that. One of them reminded me of 28 Days Later as well. I don't know why, but that just popped up in my head. So I think the song came on twice and the same thing happened. It just reminded me of like the end of that movie.
A very big inspiration to the past, or many, especially the EP, for example, has been all of this folklore that we have in Scandinavia. I don't know if you have that much of that in Denmark, do you?
Of course we do, man. Come on, don't be so Swedish.
I've always looked upon Denmark as this, you know, they have kind of lost a lot of their traditions. I mean, I'm a quarter Danish myself, but I always felt like, you know, Denmark is this kind of...
Oh, no, we found out a couple of weeks ago that they have a really weird tradition of throwing cinnamon on people when it's their birthday. So they have some traditions left.
We have huge archives of folklore in Denmark. We're just not all on Instagram about it. But the interesting thing, one of the interesting things about the Danish folklore is that it's much more centered around lakes and bodies of water.
Yeah.
As for instance, in Sweden, you see more centered towards forests, of course, so rocks and cliffs. So yeah, no, there's a lot.
I guess that part of that is, you know, something you told the children to, you know, partly, you know, scare them to not do these kind of things. And I guess that could be the reason why it's, you know, it has this vibe to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, but I've never been thinking about it, you know, like horror music, really.
I think like harrowing was the word that came to mind.
Yeah,
like, it was not necessarily scary, but had that like emotional feeling of suspense to it almost, which is why I kind of thought it would relates to like kind of good moving music, but not to be offensive in that way, as in like a high quality Hans Zimmer type.
Yeah. I mean, some of the some of your songs they end on like in a peak. I don't know how to express it because I don't have the language.
You mean like a crescendo?
Yeah, similar to how you could sometimes see in like a horror movie scene where there's like an intensified moment that leads up to somebody getting killed or snatched by a demon or whatever it is, right? Those are some of the things that I've been like noticing. I'm like, oh wait, that seems very similar in terms of like the soundscape of it all. Yeah, like that you would also see building. Yeah, exactly. So those are my very amateuristic thoughts on the issue.
We're probably just completely being so offensive right now. Like, meant to be the total opposite.
It's fine.
So, I mean, is that something you aim for, that kind of suspense feeling? Yeah. That building throughout and it getting bigger and bigger and bigger?
Yeah, I've always liked that way of writing songs. And even if it doesn't end up like that all the time, it's really, I would say those are actually my favorite songs that I like myself, that I created. And I don't know why I like to write in that way so much, but it's just more interesting somehow.
It's good. I mean, you should all, I think everybody should do what they enjoy, and that's when you get your best work, is when you're working on something you're happy with. So
yeah,
to definitely do more. Yeah. So to change subject a little bit, I guess you've had a little bit of controversy about your logo, and we said we would speak about it a little bit. We don't have to go into too much depth on it.
But yeah, I created this logo that I have. Now we're talking about this logo with the Odin face, right?
The Odin face with the one eye closed.
Yeah, so I created it in late 2013 or 14. I'm not completely sure now. And then it was printed also on the EP release that I released with Nordvis in 2015, and he released several merch with it as well, and also with the logo alone. And then I had this friend called Simon that told me that I just saw this, or I got a commercial for this, you know, brand on Instagram, and the logo looks just like yours. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I wasn't taking it that very serious, because it was this company then that they had just been created, and this was several years after. So I didn't take it that very serious, and I just thought like, oh, that's a fun thing, you know. But as time went by, it was more and more people who started to contact me and, you know, told this same thing. And in the end, it was probably like 40, 50 people that have written, you know, personal messages, like stating this. So then I finally, you know, decided to contact this company itself. And what I asked for then was basically asked to have understanding that maybe, you know, it's not so smart to have similar logos. Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, try to make claim on that I was the only one who were supposed to have Odin. That's not what it was about. It was only about the looks of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a look that I took from some influences. Partly it was a runestone called the Ledbergstenen. But it's not shown from the front at that stone. It's only like certain figures that is shown from the side. But they look quite similar in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, it's like a whole body. But it was partly that. And then also a find of a small Odin statue they have found in southern Sweden, in Scania, or old Denmark, as it used to go to Denmark. And then it was like the face of how it looks there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like what influenced me. And when I took it as a logo, I just wanted something, you know, similar to put in the middle of my logo to, you know, symbolize Odin. And when I contacted this, I wrote a very diplomatic mail stating that it wasn't maybe that smart to have the same kind of logo, because it could be confused and, you know, but I got met with this message of that would he would sue me and go ahead with all different kind of things if I took this further. And then I should remind you that this was like the answer on a very diplomatic mail,
mm-hmm.
where I only said like maybe we should, you know, make a deal, because I had been using this and it was printed on merch by my record and everything.
So, it's no good. I don't think it's good for anybody.
No, exactly. Exactly.
For two people in the same space to have, it's because people just get confused, and I think it's confusing for the end consumer as well. You know, a customer might buy something from you wanting theirs, and somebody might buy something from them thinking it's yours.
And that happened afterwards as well, that people thought like, oh, do you have something to do with this company?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, but yeah, I wasn't met with that very nice message. I don't really remember exactly what was said afterwards, but it ended in the end that I kind of gave up, because I'd answer with something that, you know, try to explain that, you know, it's maybe not so smart to have it because it could be confused. But he just refused to change his mind. And he said that, you know, he had not done this logo himself, but he had someone else doing it. And throughout the years afterwards, you know, I've heard about, you know, different explanations to how this came up, but they have never, you know, given any, you know, reasonable explanation. It's only been like, oh, it's a, you know, symbol of Odin. It belongs to everybody, but that's not really how it is about. You know, there is different signs of Odin. For example, I think you, Matthias, have used this, it's not certain that it's Odin actually, but it is this face.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a symbol that is used on some runestones not very far from where I live.
Yeah, I sort of like synthesized a face from that runestone, yeah.
And that very face is to be found on two different runestones. Mm-hmm. But between those runestones, there is, you know, maybe a 30-minute drive. But of course, back then, you know, the people who made runestones, they could still travel that, you know, distance.
Mm-hmm.
So probably we could, you know, conclude that that was probably made by the same person, as it is the same face. And it wasn't, you know, this face that existed, you know, throughout this whole area as, you know, this agreed face of Odin or, you know, Jesus or whatever it was, you know.
It's I imagine everybody had their own different depiction of what they saw Odin to be, and I imagine people, you know, everyone still does today.
Yeah,
maybe it's somebody's granddad or something.
Yeah, exactly. you don't know.
Some of them have two eyes, as we found out last week.
And, you know, in the end, I just laugh about this whole thing that they didn't want to change, but. I still think it's, you know, I don't understand, you know, all the hassle around it. Mm-hmm. Why not, you know, change while you are like contacted in good time and everything, instead of just, you know, deny it completely and go on.
So this might be me who's been a little Americanized, but I'm like wondering, why didn't you sue him?
Well, I have been contacted by people who want to help with that, actually, but it was a couple of years, like 2 years ago, it was quite close that that would happen, but then it was a friend who had been in, you know, this court thing as well, and in the end, I just realized like, oh, I don't want, you know, all of that in my life.
It's ridiculously expensive as well, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
To pursue something like that, you've got to be able to have solid proof that, you know, that you did it first. And even then, to get it to the court stage, you're still going to have had to fork out thousands of pounds, even if you get it back, you know, in the end.
It just felt like this long journey that I didn't want to go on, because in the end, I'm not so disturbed by it. I just feel like they could have done the right thing for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But they chose not to.
I guess you could say it's also an honor thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's an honor thing. And, you could always discuss like, it's maybe not similar, or it has differences. And of course it has differences, but it's like the overall form of it. And of course people have confused the two logos. So it's not like you could say that nobody can confuse them.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they are very similar.
Yeah.
I feel like I have to sit very carefully on a fence in this situation. they are very, very similar. But it's one of them where what can you do? Other than go down the legal route, there's very little options. If somebody says, puts their fingers in their ears and says, la, 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 I didn't, I'm not listening.
Right.
Other than pursuing it legally, there's very little you can do, especially when you get to the point you're at now where their growth has become so much that the people, I guess, would see that first, and they're almost seen as the bigger brand. So it kind of, people see that and associate that with them. So as a smaller sort of band, it almost looks like you're saying, you know what I mean? It's gone in the way that they've got so big that it's hard for you to say, oh, I made that first, without it seeming kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I remember sometime I wrote a post about this whole thing, and it was also because it was so many, trying to contact me about this whole thing. And I just wanted to make clear, without stating whatever company it was. And the funny thing that even if I didn't even mention the company itself, the CEO of that company wrote a personal message to me afterwards. And I find that quite funny, because in the end, I didn't even mention who it was.
Well, that tells you that they're probably triggered.
You're going to get a personal message now, Mateus.
Oh, me?
No, I think, we wanted to speak about, or you wanted to explain where you came up with the idea for it. And, we're happy to speak about anything on here. And at the end of the day, you created the logo. You can say where you created it. You can say the inspiration behind it. And it's an unfortunate situation that you're in. But it's kind of, it is unfortunate in the sense of you can't really do much, I guess, other than take it legally or just accept it, I guess, at this point.
Yeah. I mean, the only proof I have of it being, is that, I have the file, uploaded to Facebook, and you have the date for it. But, that's the only proof that it existed before. But you cannot really show that, they took it as an inspiration, because that's, what they tried to claim, that it was just a, coincidence. But how much of a coincidence can it be when, there is no similar face just like that? And by the time, I mean, now it's more, common, but by the time this whole movement, I guess we can call it now, was like almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Viking series had just started and everything, but it wasn't that very big by the time. So
I think we're going to see a lot more of this stuff and a lot more legal battles. I mean, there's consistently been a little bit here and there. There's like a German brewery that's all of a sudden it's like a marketing. What did they do? They filed patents on beers named Odin and stuff like that.
To be honest, I think those kind of parts is quite ridiculous when you try to go ahead and make claim on something that belongs to a certain heritage or a certain culture. For example, if you took a logo like you did, Matthias, I wouldn't, you know, mind, because that's like something that was made 1,000 years ago, and like it looks just like that. That's like a source. And if you use that, then you cannot really claim like, oh, you cannot use that because that's mine. Because, I mean, it was created that long ago, so.
Yeah, it kind of belongs to everybody after a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we see, obviously, we saw it pretty big a couple of years ago with a company trademarking Heathen and Shield Maiden. And it's that kind of thing where those words should belong to everybody. But equally, you kind of get stuck because some people do want to use it for nefarious reasons as well. You know, some people will trademark those words just for the sake of holding them and then wanting to gain financially from them. So it's just an evil that comes with this community and like you say, this movement of this whole genre getting so big that you do get people who just want to monetize it and make a quick cash grab where they can. And that's where you're going to find legal battles. And it's probably, like Samitate says, it's probably only going to get worse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. But I mean, there's also something to be said for, you know, drawing some lines when it comes to ownership over certain inventions, right? Like a product that is being marketed in a certain way. I personally, I don't understand the legal complications involved with, like, for instance, calling, like, you know, trademarking a T-shirt that says Shield Mating or something like that. I don't understand how that works legally, so I don't feel like I can speak sort of for or against.
I'm really curious how that courthouse looks like when you kind of tries to bring that on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mean, there are international trade agreements, right? That where you know, there's an agreement between the U.S. and the EU, for instance, about like what trademarks work where and so on. You have to, I guess, you have to go and get approval in both places. Right, but then there's universal trademark license for it. But aside from that, I have no idea how these things work. Daniel, maybe you know more about that.
Well, I just know they're extremely complicated. Obviously, we had to trademark the company name, the logo, costs a bunch of money, and I know. You have to, if you trademark a word, say like you trademark the word Shield Maiden, you have to then use it. You can't just kind of trademark it and sit on it and leave it to one side, and then 2 years down the line go, oh no, anybody that's done the Shield Maiden t-shirt, you now owe me a percentage of money. You have to, if you trademark a word or a logo or something, you have to then use it in a certain way. And if it can be proven that you've bought the trademark for kind of out of the reason to make profit from it, or in like a nefarious way, then they can also take it off you. If it's not done in good honor, in the sense of, you know, you've got a company called Shield Maiden and you want to make a t-shirt around that. If you've done it literally to stop other people, then they can step in and say, okay, no, we're going to take that back. That's not how it should be. But I mean, at the end of the day, all these things, just to pursue it, all costs you a ton of money. You know, if somebody used our trademark, we'd have to send them a cease and desist letter. And then if they just ignored it, we'd then have to pursue them legally. You know, and it gets really expensive for everybody involved.
Yeah, that's true. It does. I mean, this is one of the things. In academia, we have similar things going on when it comes to like publishing and publishing rights and those kinds of things. And yeah, I just had to talk to a lawyer about with my about my publisher doing something that I would classify as straight up fuckery with my contract. Yeah, no, it does get expensive. Like even such a like a minor little detail, we have to get a lawyer involved because people aren't, you know, following the contracts that you otherwise have. So I could see that could also be you know, really complicated and expensive when you're dealing with trademarks and you know, decent sized businesses.
The only winner is the lawyer.
Yeah, the only winner is the lawyer.
Without a doubt, because it's like £300 just to send a letter. It's astronomical money. It's just silly. It's just better if everybody can just agree to get on. But not, it's not that simple, obviously.
By the way, I've been wanting to ask you about this. How is all of this stuff playing out right now for Hoens of Odin and with the Brexit and all of that? Have you gotten your sandwiches repossessed by the Dutch border police yet?
to be honest,
a thing.
Nothing's even changed. Like I keep seeing people post stuff about how it's really affecting their postage and they can't do this and that. And it's like, oh, everything's been the same for me. I just take it to. I mean, at the end of the day, we put stuff in a box, take it to the post office. Obviously, the only difference is now that we have to fill in custom labels, which mm-hmm. we didn't have to do before. So when we send internationally to the United States or Canada or anywhere like that, there's a little label. It's like 5 centimeters by 5 centimeters, and you literally just write on it what's inside, the date, and you sign it. So you literally just have to do that now for the EU ones. So mm-hmm. basically, so they know what's in it. And I guess as long as you fill that in with enough detail to say what's in it, like we haven't had any issues. I think maybe the problems might be with people who import like on a mass scale, like import export on a big commercial side. Whereas with us, it's most of our stuff's made in the UK anyway, and then we ship to the end consumer in France, Germany, or wherever.
Yeah.
So the basic postal side of things tends to be, we've not noticed anything.
Mm-hmm. That's good to hear. I mean, actually, the custom label stuff for the UK sounds less complicated than the custom labels from the US. There's like these big forms where you have to like write the dollar value and sign and, you know, all these kinds of things.
Without a doubt, the worst place to post is the US.
Yeah,
it's the most expensive place to send post anywhere. We can send like a half kilo parcel, so a 500 gram parcel, to the middle of Africa. Anywhere in Africa, we can send it cheaper than sending it to the USA, and it's just absolutely mind-boggling to say the amount of postage. Well, you can send a 500 gram parcel anywhere else in the world cheaper than the USA. The USA recently just went into its own bracket through the Royal Mail. So you have like they work on world zones, so they'll have like UK, Europe, zone 1, zone 2, and then zone 3 is just USA on its own. And I don't know I don't know what happened, but pretty much just as the pandemic hit, the USPS put their prices up by 40%. So overnight our postage went from maybe like £15 to the USA for like a kilo parcel to £23-24. So it was just a massive jump that we had to add.
But hey, so that reminds me, Ludwig, in Sweden, you guys are also under the yoke of PostNord, aren't you?
Exactly.
So that's the same postal service in both Denmark and Sweden, and they are just like offensively horrible.
Yeah, but I mean I've noticed that it got a bit more bad when they got together, but okay. To compare it to many others, I think they're quite all right, you know.
Oh yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I noticed some terrible. I think Italy never seems to be. I always worry when stuff goes to Italy, especially if it's not sent tracked, then I always cross my fingers hoping it gets there.
So, I mean, in Denmark, I don't know how this is in Sweden, but in Denmark, they basically, they shut down all, post offices. Like, you can't go to an actual office that is for mail. You have to go to, like, the local grocery store.
Yeah.
And there's, like, that's the same in Sweden.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to renew my visa for the U.S. Some years ago, right when they had like introduced PostNord in Denmark, and basically I had to like take all my important papers, my passport and everything, put it in an envelope, and then just drop it off in a bin. Anybody could just walk up and take it.
Yeah, that sounds terrifying. Should we jump into the poem that I cannot pronounce?
Yes, Sona Tore. I've come up with sort of a tentative English translation. I guess like the loss of the sun.
Okay.
I don't know why I can't remember what the English translation is, or what the official one is. Ludwig, I just wanted to ask you, okay, what is the typical Swedish translation?
It would be basically the same.
Yeah.
Some.
Yeah, and that's the same in Danish. So, yeah, I guess that works.
Okay. Yeah, so Ludwig, you said this is a particular inspiration for you. Is it an inspiration for a particular album, or is it just a general...
I mean, I was really inspired by it when I wrote the last one. But read it, I've always been very, influenced by it. And I remember the first time I read it, and I just felt, especially towards the end, like, wow, it's really much emotion in it. And not just how he kind of talks about Odin as, he really betrayed him. And then he talks about him as, or he tries to see the good thing that came out of it, which was, the inspiration for this particular poem. And I think that's also something that I felt with the whole album, that, writing it was quite hard, because I had to go back to these kind of bad emotions and memories that I would rather forget. But in the end, I got something nice out of it.
Just a nice silver lining.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Matthias, do you want
to... Yeah, so I just wanted to preface, like, if you've been listening to our podcast regularly, you will probably have heard me praise Erik Skallagrimsson as like the coolest guy in the saga literature, and like, he is certainly my favorite. And one of the reasons I really like his saga is because there's this like huge emotional range in it. Basically, we're introduced to the mind of these people through emotions, through this character in the literature. And that's why I love his saga so much. And yeah, this poem, Sona Torek, is a great example of how you get in contact with emotions through this story. So yeah, let me begin. It's about, let me see, how many stanzas do we have? It's not short. It's one of the longer poems, just so you know.
Sorry.
You're fine. We're 25 stanzas, it looks like. Okay, so my tongue is sluggish for me to move my poem's scales ponderous to raise. The god's price is beyond my grasp, tough to drag out from my mind's haunts. Since heavy sobbing is the cause, how hard to pour forth from the mind's root, the prize that Frick's progeny found, born of old from the world of giants. Unflawed, which Bragi inspired with life on the craft of the Watcher dwarf. Blood surges from the giant's wounded neck, crashes on the death dwarf's boathouse door. My stock stands on the brink, pounded as plane trees on the forest's rim. No man is glad who carries the bones of his dead kinsman out of the bed. Yet I will first recount my father's death and mother's loss, carry from my sword shrine the timber that I build my poem from, leafed with language. Harsh was the rift that the wave hewed in the wall of my father's kin. I know it stands unfilled and open, my son's breach that the sea wrought. The sea goddess has ruffled me, stripped me bare of my loved ones. The ocean severed my family's bonds, the tight knots that ties me down. If by sword I might avenge that deed, the brewer of waves would meet his end. Smite the wind's brother that dashes the bay, do battle against the sea god's wife. This is pretty cool. He's talking about actually, like, you know, waging war against the gods right there. Okay, so
it's a brave man,
right? Yet I felt I lacked the might to seek justice against the killer ships, for it is clear to all eyes how an old man lacks helpers. The sea has robbed me of much. My kinsmen's deaths are harsh to tell. After the shield of my family retreated down the god's joyful road. Myself, I know that that in my son grew the makings of a worthy man. Had that shield tree reached manhood, then earned the claim of war's arms. Always he prized his father's words highest of all, though the world said otherwise. He shored me up, defended me, lent my strength the most support. My lack of brothers often enters my thoughts where the winds of moon bears rage. I think of the other as the battle grows, scout around and wonder. Which other valiant warrior stands by my side in the peril? I often need him when facing foes. When friends dwindle, I am weary to soar. It is rare to find one to trust amongst men who dwell beneath Odin's gallows, for the dark-minded destroyer of kin swaps his brother's death for treasure. I often feel when the ruler of wealth, and then there's a lacuna because the portion, that last portion of that stanza has is not, you can't read it in the text. And then we go on to 17. It is also said that no one regains his son's worth without bearing another offspring that other men hold in esteem as his brother's match. I do not relish the company of men, though each of them might live in peace with me. My wife's son has come in search of friendship to One Eye's hall. But the lord of the ship of the sea, brewer of storms, seems to oppose me, his mind set. I cannot hold my head upright, the ground of my face and my thoughts steed. Ever since the raging surf of heat snatched from the world the son of mine, whom I knew to shun disgrace, avoid words of ill repute. I remember still when the Geats' friend raised high to the gods' world the ash that grew from my stock, the tree bearing my wife's kin. I was in league with the Lord of Spears, pledged myself loyal to believe in him. Before he broke off his friendship with me, the guardian of chariots, architect of victory. I do not worship Vili's brother, guardian of the gods through my own longing, though in good ways too, the friend of wisdom has granted me redress for affliction. He who does battle and tackles the hell wolf gave me the craft that is beyond reproach and the nature that I could reveal those who plotted against me as my true enemies. Now my curse is tough. Death, close sister of Odin's enemy, stands in the nest. With resolution and without remorse, I will gladly await my own.
There we go. I mean, that's a heavy one.
Right? It is awesome.
It is.
You ask me.
Absolutely, but it reeks of depression. Just very, it's just very, very heavy and sad, you know, very much about loss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting perspective on, because you kind of see Vikings as these emotionless monsters, not monsters, but emotionless warriors who feel nothing. You know, the brothers die and they go to Valhalla and everyone's almost happy about their death.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm sure it wasn't like that, you know, whether you believe somebody went to Valhalla or not, you still kind of will miss them in the physical form.
Yeah, and that's really what he's saying right here. Like he definitely, based off of the content of this poem, is saying that he expects his son to, you know, be in Valhalla right now, and still he's mourning the loss. This popular idea that, you know, Vikings were like, aha, my homie just died in war, let's drink from his skull. Ah. Kind of crap. That was not how they thought about things.
No, definitely not. That's such an interesting, like I said, just a different perspective of it. And even, you know, the fact that you're so upset that you want to go to war with the gods, because you probably would blame the gods for this happening. It's their, you know, they've chosen for this to happen. And I imagine it's no small thing to say you want to go to war with the war with, right, the gods. You've got to be pretty upset.
Yeah. No, he's very pissed off here.
Ludwig, I can definitely see how that inspired the latest album.
Yeah.
Especially with like I said, that makes my feelings of emotion that I had today even all the more impressive, that you've managed to portray that through music and with, like, literally without words as well, that is in such a, you know, in just an instrumental format. I have to applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Because I've never read that poem. That's the first time I've ever heard it, and having the relation to kind of quote unquote the experience I had listening to the album earlier, it's very, you know, it's very impressive how closely they link to the way that the poem reads.
And I think didn't Aina Selvig also sing it?
Yeah, and I really enjoy that version as well.
Yeah, me too.
Because he doesn't use any instruments. It's just, you know, the whole thing, just vocals all together.
Yeah,
and I really like that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Made so simplified.
That's a brave thing to do.
Yeah.
to just sing.
Yeah, and it's it has really like this very sort of like when he's singing it, it has sort of like a dragging feeling in the way that he's singing. I really enjoy that rendition of it as well.
That's beautiful. I'm glad you read that, Matthias. I mean, if I'd have tried to read, I'd have just been spluttering all over the place. So I've got to commend your public reading as well.
Thanks. I mean, I do have, you know, some skills out in poetry.
Cool. So Ludwig, what's the plan for the future? I guess things are, tour wise, things I guess are on hold. I know. Did you ever? I mean, I messaged you a while ago. I think you were meant to visit Hebden Bridge, which is a little village, not far from me. Did that ever happen, or did COVID ruin that?
No, I was there about a year ago. Last New Year, I was there. So that was like just before.
Just before, yeah. Just in.
Yeah.
Just be. Yeah.
But that was the last time. Since then, I haven't been there. I mean, now all the tours and concerts have been either postponed or cancelled. I'm still a bit unsure about 3 Russian concerts.
Okay.
Because I don't know, but I have the feeling the COVID situation or the acceptance is a bit different over there. But we'll see. I mean, that's in October, so we don't know what will happen, you know.
Hopefully things might be a little bit better by then.
I think this year will be better, but I think that people should still be prepared that this will probably take a while before it's back to normal.
So Ludwig, are you working on any new music? Are we going to get a new album soon?
I'm planning to release an EP or something shorter around August, September.
Awesome.
I've spent this time the past year to just, you know, getting some new microphones and instruments and just try to explore some new things and options to go forward with.
That sounds exciting.
I'm looking forward to that.
And hopefully, you know, if everything sort of returns to some kind of normalcy, hopefully we can all meet at Midgardsblot in Norway this summer.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Let's wrap this up. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to be here.
So, Ludwig, do you want to shout out where people can find you, listen to your music? Anything that you want to plug?
Yeah, they can find my music at all possible streaming services. And if they want to buy any music-related physical products, they can always visit nordvis.com, and it will be available there.
Perfect. Matthias?
Yeah, well, you can always find me on my personal Instagram, Matthias Nordvig. And you should, of course, always go check out the Nordic Mythology Podcast's site on Facebook if you're into that platform. Mm-hmm. And Daniel, do you want to plug the rest?
And I feel like I'm getting an expert, I know. So you've got at Nordic Mythology Podcast on Instagram. Obviously, you have our website now, which has some cool merch on there. We're going to be when this comes out, we will have released a limited edition t-shirt that Raven from the North did for us. So that's really exciting. It's going to be a really limited print. So jump on there and pick one up before they all disappear. Obviously, support if you can support us on Patreon. Obviously, it helps us keep building the show. And again, once we reach 100 patrons, we will be releasing a new weekly episode where me and Matthias sit down and critique the Viking series beginning to end. You know, we'll go through it, have a laugh, we'll say what's good, what's bad, what we enjoy, what we don't like. You guys can join in. It'll be a bit more of a lighthearted style episode. Obviously, if you enjoy the podcast, please just take a moment to leave us a 5-star review and a positive rating. And on the YouTube channel, just watch the videos, hit subscribe, comment, like. Again, it just brings eyeballs to the platform and what we're doing. Matthias, were you going to jump in?
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I was just going to say then also go check out our new website and get one of the It's Complicated t-shirts in Old Norse.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do that. We've had a lot of...
need one of those.
Yeah, definitely. We've had a few people asking how you would pronounce it, so I don't know if you want to...
Thought I flocked.
There you go. I was like, I did joke that I was going to have a go at it, but I would fuck it up so bad. So there we go. Yeah. Like I say, you can find us mainly on our new Instagram page, and you can find everything else from there. And yeah, so thank you for the support. Hopefully you've enjoyed it, and we will see you again soon.